This meeting is being recorded.
Got it.
All right. So please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you to everyone for being here today.
You want me to do roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay. Bill Cover is absent. Jeff Jones?
Present.
Bruce Utter?
Here.
John Dashner?
Present.
Sharon Tobias?
Present.
Dan Crosby? And Andy Rich?
Here. No.
And then joining us is our legal counsel, Andrew Ramos, our general manager, Tyler Mayo, Tom Schneider, Craig Lutz, Joe Morgan just signed on, and myself, Kathy Powell.
Welcome, everybody.
Morning.
Good morning, guys.
Thanks, Sharon.
Hope you guys are having a nice September.
At least it cooled off.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful.
We're going to get rain here today where I live. I don't know what it's like in Arnold.
Tomorrow. I think we get it tomorrow.
I think we get it tomorrow, too. I'm wrong. So I sent my daughter off to college without a jacket or rain gear or anything, and she's getting rain, too. On her first day of school. I was like, use a plastic bag.
So. Where did she decide to go, Sharon?
She's at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo.
Oh, nice.
So, she's her room is right next door to my room when I went there.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, sorry, I digressed. So I guess we can start with our public comment. Is there anyone from the public who would like to ask questions or make statements? All right. So the next item is a consent calendar. Does anyone have any questions or would like to remove any of these items from the consent calendar? All right, barring none, I think we approve those. We need a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Move to accept the consent calendar. This is Jeff.
I'll second.
All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, so it's motion carries. So the next item is the committee reports, or I guess reports. So the first one would be Tyler.
Yeah, so for the update for the HAA5, in August, our results were running only our water, no longer CCWD right now. And where we had the high levels keeps going down, was Jerry Lynn, which is a 49.5. The MCL is a 60. And then go down one more, Kathy, next page. And then that would be Ruth. That was where the violation happened. It's 49.1 now, and it was a 63.4. So we're well below the MCL level now. The next page, we did more samples in September. And in September, we don't have to report those ones, so we were just doing this for our knowledge. We also tested Summit View, which is the first one, which that is actually CCWD's water as it enters our system. And it looks like what they have done is lowered their HAA5s as well. It's now a 40.6. And then our Jerry Lynn, go down a little more, Kathy, is now a 41.2. And Ruth is even lower than what it was previously as well, down on the next page. Is now a 43.2 currently. So it's gone down fairly drastically. We're going to do one more sample that's just like this in October. And if CCWD levels are still around that 40 range, low 40s, we should be able to turn them back on.
So we're still off at this point, right?
Yes, correct.
So where should this number be to pass, the California regs?
It just needs to be below 60, and the 60 is an average over four quarters. So right now, our average, we're under 50, and as it keeps coming and we're going to be reporting these quarters, we'll have one more in December to report, and we should be well under our limit. So we normally run on the tank four side, it is around a 40 to a 50 range.
Do you know what CCWD has done to improve the their readings?
Flushing the water out of the system. The age of the water was the biggest reason for them to have it go up. So they went around and have been flushing. Because we have a drought, it's always very tough to go flush a bunch of water on the ground. But if people aren't using the water, it ages. And when it ages, the HA5s climb. So this happened in our last drought as well. Our HA5s climbed, as well as our TTHMs.
So if the state requires four quarters under 60, do we then assume that we won't get CCWD water turned back on until June or July of next year?
No, we should be able to turn it on right away. The average over four quarters, it just the average has to fall below 60. We can actually have, let's say, a 65 for one quarter and then have three quarters of 40s. If it averages below 60, we're not in violation. So with right now, we are not on violation. We are completely within compliance with over our four quarters. It's, like I said, currently the average is a 52.8, and with the next reporting of a 40, it'll lower it down even more. So we should be able to, I would say it'll be around 48, maybe a 49 on our total for the average.
So we've been off CCWD water for a while. Why is it the numbers like closer to zero, or they haven't seemed to drop that much?
There's never a zero. There's always a byproduct of chlorine when you use chlorine as a disinfectant. So
what is our numbers on the other side?
From our well side, it's about a 30 ranges from about 36 to 39.
Okay. And didn't we get hit by the state board for a violation?
Yes, we were over violation over the averaging in four quarters at the first quarter of this year. So he let us know that we were in a non-compliance, basically just letting us know that we have to notify the public that it was over. And now that we're back under, he's released the non-compliance order.
Okay. And that's when you say one year average, is that at each individual sites, or is that all the sites?
No, that's each individual site, and we have four different sites throughout our system that we have to test for TTHM and HA5s.
Hmm. So it's each site.
We have two on the tank six side, and we have two on the tank four side. And it was the tank four side that we were having issues with, which is where CCWD water comes from.
So we send a notice to our customers, as required by law, indicating that we had failed the test.
Should we now send notice to the customers that we've solved the problem or that the problem has been solved?
It's not required by the state. We obviously can. It's just somewhat costly for us to send out mailers and make up a packet. But yes, we could easily notify the public multiple ways that it's within compliance again.
Do we have email addresses for most of our customers?
Kathy, I think it's like 3/4 of them.
That's probably about half. But I think, didn't the letter that we send out say that it had been in the past and that we were in compliance now as of the date of the letter?
I believe so. I would have to read over the letter again.
Yeah, I think it said that it was a past, whatever, that we were too high in the past, but now we were good was part of the cover letter that went out.
And is that prior letter included on the website? I assume it probably is, huh?
Yes, we had to post it on the website and a public place, so our bulletin board, and we had to mail it.
All right, well, maybe if we're not required to do a mailing and say we are in compliance at a minimum, stack it on the website next to the other one so someone looking at it can see the whole story there.
Have we received any panic calls from concerned shareholders?
No panic calls, just a couple asking if the water was safe to drink. But we only had maybe a half a dozen calls out of everybody that received the letter. So, no panic calls.
Yeah, I think it would be good to at least post something on the website indicating that the problem's in the rearview mirror.
Okay.
Yeah, and avoid the snail mail cost if we can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if it's not legally required, then I would think that just posting it on the website is enough.
I agree. Next in my report is we had Kurt from Aurora Pump for our repair of our pump. Kurt had replaced the assembly and everything was great on it. While he was there, we were having him change the bearings on the other booster pump at the treatment plant. And upon pulling it out, we found the shaft had wear spots in two different areas that the shaft was at any moment going to fail. So we went ahead and I asked Sharon and Bill Cover for the authority to just have Kurt order that second repair for the other pump, which will be the same repair for approximately $15,000. It'll be a whole new assembly, once again, inside the pump. So the pump will basically be brand new, except for the casing. That is scheduled. Hopefully, he'll receive it in the next 3 weeks. It got kind of pushed back because he wasn't able to get a hold of Aurora Pumps to get the replacement parts. And lastly, in my report would just be a little bit on the drought. Not a whole lot has changed since we went to drought stage 2. There's been no additional mandates from the state that are required for us. I've been meeting with Calaveras Conserves, and we put out a video just kind of showing how dire Spicer Reservoir is, Maloney's is, and what people could do to help save water. So that was basically all that's really happened with the drought recently.
So I had a question about the wells. Since we've been using the wells a lot more for all the shareholders, have you seen any wear and tear in the wells? Is the drawdown more? Is the recovery less?
No, it's almost the same. So right here, the chart that Kathy pulled up is my charts for the wells. August of last year, our top end was 143 feet out of well 3. We're at 139. And the low drawdown while we're pumping is currently at 101. And a year ago, it was at 106. well for. It always recovers very well. So it's about 570, and the low is a 565. So it hasn't changed very much. It's the wells are doing what they typically do this time of year. We always have it rise a little bit come at the beginning of summer, as you can see in the charts over the winter, and then it slowly dips down throughout August to October, and then in November it usually starts to come back.
Okay.
Well, water usage is also way off from last year.
Water usage is extremely down. I think it was this last month was the lowest it had been in 12 years in August. If you go, when I went back and looked at everything, it's the people are saving a lot of water. So that's good.
We've been drinking wine instead.
Thank you, Bruce. That's great.
Doing my part.
That's it for my general manager's report.
I think Tom is up next for the long range planning committee.
All right. So I have a few different topics to discuss today. First one I wanted to touch on was standing committees. At our, I guess it was in July, the board meeting, we had some discussions that went first of all, I think we kind of solidified who the leads and members of each standing committee would be. But there was some discussion on exactly how each standing committee would operate. So we decided at that meeting that Tyler, Lee, Sharon, and Andrew and I would get together and discuss that. So we met on July 20th to figure out how to provide additional guidelines. And so I sent out this chart package after that meeting, got some feedback, and incorporated that feedback, and the result is in this chart package that will hopefully give the standing committees some understanding of how they should operate and the method of operations. And their guidelines, I made them as detailed as I could, so that hopefully any questions that they may have in the future, they might get answered in these packages, in this package. So based on that, we're going to go through the chart package and I'll discuss those topics that are showing on this page. Next chart. So if anybody has any disagreement with how the leads and members are laid out on this chart, you know, based on what I last heard in the board meeting and then some feedback from Tyler afterwards, and then a little more feedback from Craig, this is what I ended up understanding what the leads and the members of each committee would be. Anybody have any disagreement with that? Okay. So if we move on to the next chart, kind of along the same lines that we had for the overall long-range planning committee, the standing committees will serve as an advisory committee to the board, reviewing and making recommendations based on the subject matter expertise that the committee members gain during their participation in the committee. And the whole end goal is to ensure a dependable and high-quality water supply at the most affordable price. All the committees kind of center around on that, you know, finding the best solutions for our water and working on our budgets and making sure that we look for all the ways that can make the water as affordable as possible. So the first Finance and Rates Committee, Standing Committee, It's aligned with the rate structure goals to provide recommendations in the development of our rate structure in parallel with the treasurer's proposed annual budget. I'm showing the rate structure goals that were developed several years ago with the Long Range Planning Committee. And so based on what the Standing Committee feels going forward, they can keep those same goals as their rate structure goals or decide to revise them. The committee will also review and analyze water meter usage data that's provided by Kathy and utilize it in the consumptive rate structure recommendations that are made to the treasurer, the staff, and board. Perform ongoing reserves analysis based on the annual updates that are performed on the asset management plan database and guidelines that are also provided in the reserves fund policy and operating procedure, and make recommended reserve fund revisions as needed, and perform periodic multi-year cash flow analysis. If we move on to the next page, infrastructure and facilities. They oversee the maintenance and updates of the asset management plan Excel database, coordinate annual meeting with the Blue Lake Springs management and staff for asset replacement cost updates to ensure that the long-term capital asset reserves budget is sufficient, and coordinate items 1 and 2 there with the finance and rates committee to determine if there are any impacts to budgets and or the reserves. And they perform as a sounding board to the Blue Lake Springs board for proposed capital projects. Investment management. They review, research, and assess and recommend to the board investment strategies and specific investments that should be made to safeguard and maximize returns of shareholders' money. And per the statement of investment policy, which was approved earlier this year, review and make recommendations to the general manager and treasurer regarding changes to the investment and management of the company's surplus funds, i.e. the reserves, prior to board approval. Personnel receives annual compensation package recommendations on the salaries, bonuses, and performances from the general manager. From that, they also perform an annual independent analysis of the data in the AWWA compensation survey and Bureau of Labor Statistics civilian compensation costs and wage and salary changes. Those are the documents that Andy has been using for the last few years. And based on the above, they determine a recommended compensation package for Blue Lake Springs general manager and staff to propose to the board for approval. And moving on to the next page for the next standing committee. The last one, water supply, conservation, and outreach. And I believe Jeff already had a meeting. So in this standing committee, they will stay abreast of long-term water supply issues, primarily during extended droughts, based on monthly water usage reports, coordinate as needed with the Blue Lake Springs general manager and staff on conservation matters and measures for high-use customers. In coordination with the staff and general manager, continue to stay abreast of all water source options. Ones that we've discussed in the past have been purchasing additional CCWD surface water and or development of existing groundwater wells that we also own. As required, they will also, with finance and rate standing committee involvement, perform CCWD versus wells cost-benefit analysis comparisons. Any comments or anything else that so far? Okay, the next page. Get into just some of the other questions that might come up that I just put together some bullets on. Determining the number of committee members. typically the committee members are composed of less than a quorum of the board, so three or less. This means that the committees will not need to have a notice meeting each time they want to meet, including the general manager and staff in many of the committee meetings. Discussions can provide valuable input and does not factor into the quorum. So in the past, the Long Range Planning Committee has pretty much included the general manager and staff in all of our meetings. So our members appointed in terms of appointment, this kind of developed throughout the process of developing these standing committees. Most agencies are authorized by the board president to appoint the committee members and rotate positions each year. So over the last few months, our board elected to have members volunteer for committees, which will continue to be the process as long as we are able to achieve proper representation on each committee. Members will serve a one-year term, with elections occurring at the organizational meeting following the annual shareholders meeting. Selecting the lead for each committee. Volunteer appointments agreed by the board or appointed by vote of the committee and agreed to by the chosen lead. So on to the next page. The function and approach of each standing committee. So they gather and compile and analyze the subject matter task information. Based on the committee group discussions, they will reach a consensus on task assignments, plan, task process, outcome and timelines and recommendations to the board, and provide and present the task updates or completion status to the board for review and approval. The standing committee lead role, responsible to guide the committee in its work as outlined in this document and as directed by the board, facilitates all committee meetings, facilitates the assignment of tasks to committee members, serves as a primary communication link with the GM and staff and board concerning the activities of the committee, and typically presents committee task updates and recommendations at board meetings, but may delegate to other committee members that may have greater subject matter expertise. Assignment of tasks within the standing committees. Most tasks are not assigned to an individual member, but they're generally, the way they worked with the long-range planning committees, they're worked and completed through group discussions, facilitated by the lead and resulting in a committee consensus. The lead may decide to assign specific tasks to a member with subject matter expertise. Next page. Determining which standing committee is assigned a task. Existing responsibilities and tasks assigned to a specific standing committee will remain unchanged. So all the tasks that the standing committees are currently assigned will remain that way unless changes are approved in the future. As new responsibilities and tasks arise, the subject matter content and objective will be evaluated and discussed with GM, staff, and board to determine the best suited standing committee to assign the task. The board will then vote and delegate responsibility for that. And let's see. So communications and flow of information. All standing committees' outward flow of information and communications shall maintain transparency and be respectful to our shareholders. This is one of the goals that we always had with the Long Range Planning Committee. Some standing committee tasks and responsibilities may influence decisions in other committees and or Blue Lake Springs manager and staff and will require interface. So they're not, some tasks will have to be, have interface with other committees or with the management and staff in order to resolve and find a good solution for them. Is recommended that communications and flow of information between committees and the general manager and staff be through each standing committee lead. The board president requests from time to time for standing committee information and status updates be provided by the committee lead. Standing committee task updates and recommendations at board meetings shall be presented by the lead with support from the committee members as needed. And the last page on standing committees, next area discussed is when and how often should committees meet. Suggested each standing committee meet at least quarterly. This was a goal with the Long Range Planning Committee to evaluate any ongoing task progress and review completed tasks. And frequency should be determined by the lead with and will depend on current assigned tasks and the planned timeline for expected updates or completion reporting to the board. How do committees meet? Based on the information to be shared and discussed, committees shall decide the most appropriate and convenient meeting approach that results in the highest level of participation. Meeting or discussion options may include in-person, Zoom, conference call, or via email. And committee meetings do not need to be formal. Many times, email discussions between committee members and staff are fine. Comments or questions on this portion?
So on page 29, you say that the committees are board members of three or less. If we wanted to bring in outside expertise or somebody else on the committee, is that allowed or is that?
Sure. We've definitely had that as an option. When we had the Long Range Planning Committee, and I think we considered it a couple times, but never actually went outside of the Board of Directors or the Long Range Planning Committee and hired anybody, from what I recall.
Okay.
But that's definitely an option if that's decided and approved by the board.
So these are just guidelines. Do you think we need to add a bullet that says that, you know, outside expertise can be used as stated? Or?
Sure, that'd be totally appropriate.
And is it up to the committee to decide who to bring in, or should we have like?
Yeah, the way I'll word it is, if the committee decides that an outside agency would provide a great benefit, then I would state that they would propose it to the board and get the board's approval and make sure that that the budget is available depending on the cost of that outside company that is hired. So I'll word it in that way.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Mm-hmm. So, no other questions or comments?
Nope.
It's a fine job, Tom. Well done.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Great, Tom.
So the area, we've talked about the reserves fund policy and operating procedure revisions in prior board meetings. There were certain things in the policy and procedure that needed updates based on us completing the USDA project and, you know, the introduction of standing committees taking over for the Long Range Planning Committee. So back in July, Craig, Andy, Tyler, Lee, and myself met to review and make recommended revisions to the policy and procedure. Sent out marked up red lines in August for review, and based on feedback, the red lines that you're gonna see that we'll be going through in a minute here were the outcome of those revisions and the concurrence that we got on the changes to make. But first, I wanted to present a few charts here that show the revisions, you know, in general, the different areas that were revised in the procedure and policy. So I'll go through those. Next chart. So this kind of gives you an idea of our reserves and restricted bank account balances. So I added August in to show how things have changed since we first started reviewing this in May, and compare that to our target levels for the each of their reserves. So you can see there the reserve bank accounts in the top section, and how much we've the policy and procedure have set aside as the existing dollar amounts for each of those fund targets. So you can see, based on the account balances, we're in good shape in meeting all of our reserve fund targets. So all of the reserve bank accounts, except for the USD El Dorado Savings Bank, we classify as just reserve bank accounts, and that's the way they're shown on our balance sheet. And the restricted bank accounts are the money that's put into those either monthly or at the end of the year are for the USDA required debt reserve and annual loan payment reserve. Any question on this page? Next chart. So a summary of the changes that were made since back in May when we discussed this in a board meeting. The original policy and procedure were approved while the USDA project was still going on. And at that point in time, all we had were the USDA letter of conditions that governed what was required as far as reserves go, and updates. So updates once the USDA project was completed, the final loan closing docs took precedent over the letter of conditions. So this will reflect changes that were made based on that. The revised format of the policy and procedure reserves fund target level tables, which are part of each of those two documents, were made more concise and easier to relate to the policy and procedure. Before, there was a bunch of extra information in there that just made it more confusing. So when we get to attachment A, those tables have been made more concise. We deleted the short-term asset reserve. It was required in the letter of conditions, but not in the closing docs. We added the annual loan payment reserve because it was stated in the final loan closing docs. We revised restricted reserve funds to include only the USDA debt reserve and annual loan payment. Previously, we had the emergency reserve in these documents listed as a restricted reserve, but we've moved it to the operating reserve fund. We revised the wording in the policy and procedure docs to reflect approved change from the long-range planning committee to the standing committees. And based on information from Tyler, the latest timeline estimates that he decided we would move capital asset replacements, kind of leftover tasks from the USDA project mostly, were previously shown in this year, and we've moved them to 2023. There's also going to be a new proposed revision that I'm going to be showing at the end of these presentations, where the attachment A showed a column for the USDA debt reserve, which is it's 42,700 and something, or 42,666 or something like that, that was showing in a column in attachment A in both the policy and procedure. And based on discussions I've had with Lee and Tyler over the last couple weeks, our reserve bank accounts already include funding for the full 10-year commitment of that debt reserve. So I'll go into that a little bit later. Next page. So in May, in the May board meeting, attachment A in the policy and procedure reflected that the reserve account beginning balance be that figure there at $1,817,386, with annual net asset increases that would be required each year of $150K to result in a successful 40-year funding plan for the capital asset replacements and also satisfy the 10-year funding requirement for the debt reserve. So based on current bank account reserves data, and the estimated USDA loan income that will be coming in over the remaining months of 2022, we will have sufficient reserves to cover all the policy and operating procedure fund target levels, with a revised beginning balance going down to $1,754,042, and annual increases of a only 145 instead of 150 needed to still meet our capital asset long-range funding plan. And I'll go into more detail on our new revised plan in a little bit, which is mentioned in the next bullet. A further revision of attachment A, removing the debt reserve, will be proposed and discussed later. Some additional notes. The annual increase to our reserves account is required to incrementally build up our total capital asset replacement fund to cover significant costs that will incur over a 40-year period. Examples of those significant expenditures include Unit 13 Cypress Point area, water distribution system upgrade that was not part of the USDA project. So that's over $2 million, and replace the residential meters. I think they're required every 18 years or something like that, 15, 16, 18 years somewhere. Well, 2038 is the next year that the plan says that they should be replaced, and that's another $500K expenditure. So as we build up the amount each year into our reserves fund, even though we have a whole bunch of money sitting on our reserves and nothing that's being expended during some of those years, we have to build up those amounts each year to meet some of these big expenditures that are coming downstream. That's what I'm trying to explain there. Reserves will be funded from the accumulated year-end carryover in net revenues. And if it's determined that in the annual budget development process for the next year that the net asset funds are not adequate to cover the $145K that we need to fund the plan each year, the shortfall shall be included as an expense line item in the budget. Next page. So the next two pages are just in here for information purposes. Yes.
Yeah, let me interrupt for just a moment. Can we go back, Kathy, to the prior page? So in the second to last bullet point that says reserves will be funded from accumulated year-end carryover in net revenues,
right?
We won't know that until the end of the year. So based on...
I was just going to say, what Lee and Tyler mentioned to me was that, by the October November timeframe, we have a pretty good idea of what those net revenues are going to be. Tyler, you want to say anything more on that, or do we need Lee here?
Well, Tyler.
That's muted. It seems like if we don't have those net revenues that year, we fall short. It's the next year we have to put a line item within the budget. Currently, we have a line item in the budget for it. So whether we fall short, we're trying to plan for it so we don't have the issue of falling short.
Yeah, well, it seemed to me as though we should have an ongoing line item for, you know, reserve funding, you know, in the budget with an actual dollar amount allocated.
I should have worked.
This is Craig. I can comment on that. I think we talked about this in one of our prior calls, but you know, I'm the lead of that committee that covers that. And I know Tyler just sent out a draft of the budget, and it does have a, you know, to the committee anyway. And it does have a line item in there for transfers to reserves now. I'm not sure I understand exactly what's in it, but I think that's the way we're headed, is to budget for that transfer every year. So it's there for everybody to see.
Yeah, I shouldn't have worded it the way I did in that last bullet, Andy, that if we see that we're going to have a shortfall, we'll include an expense line item. There's going to be an expense line item in there no matter what.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was the point I was hoping to make.
Okay. So the next two pages I'm not going to get into any detailed discussion on, but I wanted to just give all the board members information on the details that are in the 40-year plan. So this shows all the different capital asset replacements in the year that they're planned to occur, the dollar amount that has been estimated, in, which is an escalated dollar amount based on the year that they occur. And if any of them are highlighted in yellow, they require soft costs, 20% soft costs. So those soft costs get added in. So anywhere you see yellow, those are the soft costs that have been added in to those specific capital asset improvements that require engineering design and other contingencies based on a more complex capital replacement. So at the end, the bottom line, you'll see that the total dollar amount with soft costs included for all those that require it, the 40-year replacement costs are at $6,751,198 at this point. And this gets reviewed annually. It'll get reviewed annually by the standing committee along with Tyler and Billy, if he includes Billy in those. But so that's an annual review process that over the last couple of years that I've done with Tyler and Billy and Lee.
Oh,
can you define soft costs a little more thoroughly, I guess? For instance, does that include the labor to install a piece of capital equipment? Is that a soft cost?
Yes, that's all included. For instance, things that were more complex that we had MC Engineering helping us on. So all the design and development that they provided, all the materials, and all the labor to complete the project are all included in those costs.
Okay.
So the numbers on the sheets, are they from MC Engineering when they did the 30-year plan, 40-year plan, or these numbers that we came up with?
Actually, they provided in the overall plan, they provided soft costs on every single asset. And so over the last, I guess it was in the first year probably, that they completed the plan. We reviewed it, Tyler, Billy, and myself, and they identified that a lot of these are just straight out buys. You know, some of them don't require any design and development. So they identified the ones that do require the soft costs. So rather than applying soft costs on every piece of capital, we've narrowed it down to just the ones that we feel are required. So it was revised in that manner.
But the dollar amounts for like a 6-inch valve or whatever, is that from MCE, or did we review that and do a sanity check on all these numbers?
All the dollar amounts were provided by MCE based on their the work that they went out and did to find costs, you know, current year costs that were escalated. But they were all provided by them. There were a few that looked out of line that Tyler has revised in some of our updates. But initially, they were all provided by MC Engineering.
Oh, yeah.
Any other questions on this package?
No.
Okay. So now we'll get into the red lines that were reviewed and approved by the little committee that we had that went out and decided which updates were required in these. So, you know, this was initially approved on January 5th, 2019. So this will be actually the first approved update to the policy, if approved. So all the areas that are highlighted show where we made changes. So going back to that one page where I mentioned the bullets of all the areas that were changed, you'll see a lot of those get repeated in here. So the first area just deals with how initially it said the long-range planning committee, but now it identifies the two standing committees that would get involved in that part of the process. Continuing down. So initially at the bottom there, number 5, everything was initially based on the letter of conditions that I mentioned. Now that we have the USDA project completed, it's determined by the final closing document. And so that's what that deals with. Then the final closing document, the restricted accounts are as shown there, the debt reserve and annual loan payment reserve. Scroll down. Same again there in definition and goals. It got changed to the standing committees. Operating reserve fund down lower under number 3. So there was some wording put in there because the operating reserve funds now also includes the emergency reserve. So so that got added in there, ensure timely first response to emergencies. And the next area down, target minimum amounts, restricted reserve funds. We added in the annual loan payment that wasn't showing there before. And then again, it's showing that's based on the final loan closing documents. And number 3 down there, again, it's adding in the operating reserves funds shall include the water rate stabilization revenue shortage reserve and the emergency reserve. So it's adding in the emergency reserve there. Those are the two that fall under the operating reserve. Go on your page, next page. Is the top of it the same thing I was just... discussing, or is that something new? That's also just talking about the USDA loan payment that was added in. You go down to the bottom there, funding of reserves. So, so to establish the current year 2022 total annual reserve funds, the board shall designate $1,380,149 of existing accumulated combined restricted and unrestricted liquid net assets as the beginning balance of the fund, and that equates to 100% of the total reserve fund target levels. So down below that, additional reserve funds to achieve fund target levels may also be funded through annual net reserve increases as long as those funds are available, at which time the future funding source shall be determined from accumulated year-end carryover and net revenues. And then down below, these amounts will be determined by the general manager, treasurer, and I think if you go down further, it talks about how, and the long range, the applicable long range standing committees. So down under authority of use, we included the president in there, that authority to use the reserves shall be, you can see in these paragraphs, the responsibility of that resides with the treasurer and president. Obviously, these things will come before the board to make sure that the board approves the use of these reserves as if and when they're decided to be used. Again, down below, we're just talking about changes we've talked about, long-range planning, standing committees inserted there. The reserve funds on the financial balance sheet are shown as either reserved or restricted accounts. You can page down through. It's just repeating standing committees a few times. Down under reserve funds, restricted reserve funds, you can see there that annual loan payment reserve was added. operating reserves, the emergency reserves is now showing there. I don't know why it wasn't highlighted. I forgot. So target level levels, restricted reserve funds. I mentioned there that if you go to the closing documents, the USDA debt reserve is referred to as the reserve account. That first sentence, we just made it, you know, a little bit easier to understand. So we did some wordsmithing there. So the target level for the USDA debt reserve, as I mentioned earlier, is $42,766 for the first 10 years. It's 10% of our annual loan payment for 10 years. But as I mentioned earlier, and we'll talk about a little more, we already have that full amount set aside in our reserve accounts. The wording got changed under events or conditions prompting the use of the fund for the debt reserve. So this is taken right out of the loan closing document. With prior written approval of the government, funds may be withdrawn and used for such things as loan installments, emergency maintenance, extensions to facilities, and replacement of short-lived assets, subject to conditions established by the government. So we do have that option of going and getting approval from the USDA if we decide that we need to take money out of that debt reserve at any point in time. You can see below that, that wording didn't change. When funds are withdrawn during the life of the loan, we need to repay it. And the USDA charge down to shareholders is funded over 10 years. Under the loan payment reserve, again, in the loan closing docs, this is referred to as a debt service account. And again, we just we made the wording a little cleaner there, as stipulated as a requirement in the USDA loan closing documents. It's required to be established and must be set aside in a restricted account. So target fund level, we put in the wording that starting January 2021 for 40 consecutive years, we must deposit sufficient amounts which will accumulate for the next installment of the note, the sum of $427,666 annually in the loan payment reserve. It shall be payable in January of each year, starting in January 2022. So we paid our first installment earlier this year. We redlined the conditions prompting the use of the fund. The only use of that fund is for use for our annual loan payment. So down under, you see all the green strike throughs there. We moved the operating reserve funds out of restricted and down into operating. So that's why that's deleted there. Capital asset reserve funds. So the current in the yellow there, the target fund level currently is $501,565, calculated based on the estimated current replacement cost of assets, including any that have soft costs associated with the fund with a remaining useful life of 5 years or less. So when you'll see the target fund level of our capital asset replacements, those two detailed pages showing in the last part of my presentation, the first 5 years, including all the soft costs associated with those capital asset replacements, totals up to that $501,565. And that fund is reviewed annually and minimally updated every 5 years. If you move on to the next page. Operating reserve funds, let's see. So talking about the first fund there, Water Rate Stabilization Revenue Shortage Reserve, it's just an operating fund. And in there, we just revised the wording a little bit in the target fund level. As an example, based on our identified risks, we went through a process that we identified the level of risk in our operating reserve and determined that 3 months of our current 2022 annual budget, not including the USDA loan payment and or depreciation, it amounted to $1,232,606. So 3 months of that equaled $308,152, and that's how we arrived at that target fund level. The next section down deals with the emergency reserve. There was not really any change other than it moved from a restricted reserve to an operating reserve. And you can see there that we changed it in the last sentence of that first paragraph to non-restricted.
Hey, Tom?
Yes.
This is Dan. So the the paragraph up above that you're explaining target fund levels, is that saying we should be putting in $308,000 into the reserve every year?
No, no. Each year, that should be reviewed. And based on the annual budget without the loan payment or depreciation, whatever that total dollar amount comes to in our budget, if we determine the risk levels are still the same, then we would take 3 months of that budget, and that dollar amount would change to that. Does that explain it?
Then we take the $308,000 out of our annual budget. Where would we take that from?
You're not taking it out of there. It's in our reserves account in the bank.
Right.
So it's not in our budget. It's in our bank account. And so if that dollar amount, say, went up by $50,000 next year, we would just need to make sure that reserve account reflects that.
Okay. So just basically saying that we should have a reserve account that's equal to 3 months our annual budget.
Yeah, it's just cash parked in a different account. That's all it is. Just moving cash from one pocket to the other, essentially.
Is it moving money, or is it just setting the minimum amount we should have in the reserve?
Say again?
Based on the current year's budget, it's stating what we feel the reserve amount should be for that year for that fund.
Okay, so just saying that's what the reserve account should be. That's just kind of a guidelines of
right
what we think should be in there. It's not moving money, anything. It's just setting guidelines of what the value is.
Yes.
Okay.
So we already talked about the emergency reserve there. So this shows the target fund levels. You can see there the debt reserve, 42,766 cumulative for 10 years. I mentioned earlier that we already have the full 10-year amount saved in a reserve accounts. We included in the annual loan payment reserve there that it accumulates in restricted account monthly. So I believe Lee sets that aside in our in a restricted account every month. She increases it so that in January of the following year, we have the full annual amount in there.
Let me interrupt again for a moment. So you say it accumulates in the restricted account monthly, but we have, bi-monthly billing? So
right.
Shouldn't this read bi-monthly? It's a small thing, but.
Yeah, it could. Actually, the way that the loan closing doc, I think I read it again, and it says, it's not even this specific. It really just states that we need to accumulate money in that restricted account so that at the time the loan payment's due, we have enough in there. So it doesn't say that we have to do it monthly.
Although there is plenty of cash to do it monthly. So it's just the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I already talked about how we got to the current capital asset replacement fund target, the 501,565. Emergency reserve, 100,000. Talked about how we got to the water rate stabilization revenue shortage reserve. So all those total are current reserve fund targets at 1,380,149. We move on to attachment A, next page. So starting in 2022 and going for 40 years down to the bottom, you can see year 2061. Based on all those details you saw in that Excel spreadsheet, a couple pages in the last part of the presentation, those dollar amounts in each year reflect the dollar amounts that were in that table. So this attachment A shows the 145 that I said was required annually to keep funding our plan to the point where it would be able to fund all the capital asset replacement costs that are showing in, can't see the column number up there, but it must be, let's see, D, capital asset replacement costs, including soft costs. So that 145, if you take away the capital asset replacements that will be expended in each of those years, and in this attachment A, we also are showing the debt reserve. So if you took away the asset replacement costs in D and E, then you would get to the reserve account balance showing in F at the end of each year. So you can see there throughout the 40 years, we never go into a negative. By putting 145K into this account each year, we're always maintaining a pretty positive reserve account balance at the end of each year. We get down to a low balance down in 2057, but never get to a point where we're going into the negative. And you can see some of the big years like 2035 there. That's the year where we have the large capital infrastructure improvement in that one area that wasn't completed during the USDA project, where you see the 2038, 499, 762 figure, that's when we're replacing water meters. So so by getting the net revenues of 145K each year into this plan, we meet our funding plan for 40 years without, and at the end of 40 years, I just want to mention too, that's when our loan ends. So that's when $427,000 that we're paying each year will no longer be required. Any comments or questions?
Thank you, Tom.
I believe the next charts, what Kathy has done is removed all the markups. So it's just a clean copy of all this. So you can just page through it, Kathy. It just shows a clean version. And then if there are no further questions, let's move on to the operating procedure. And I'm not going to go into as much detail explaining these because it's basically, you know, all the same things that required the red lines. So, yes. Restricted reserve accounts, we know that it includes the debt reserve and the annual loan payment. Keep moving. Stop me anywhere, anybody, if you have any questions. Operating reserve funds now include the emergency reserve. We talk about the same things that we did in the last document. The operating reserve fund now includes the emergency reserve and the water rate stabilization revenue shortage reserve. And you'll see again the substitution of the standing committees, finance and rate standing committee and infrastructure and facility standing committee that get involved, whereas before we stated long range planning committee. Keep going. Yeah. So there is one thing that's showing in here that wasn't in the policy. AOM is, I believe, administrative office manager. That was Lee at the time, and I guess it's still Lee. She's the office manager. So she shall credit interest income. So by looking at our reserve accounts in the bank, she will continue to credit interest income to the specific reserve funds that was earned until the respective fund is 25% over the target level, at which point surplus funds will be reallocated to other reserve funds whose funding level might be below the requirement as stated in the fund policy. So if we're seeing that a fund, one of the funds might be running a little bit behind and one is has surplus funds over and above the target level, she can bring it to the board and they can, and the treasurer, and they can decide to move funds from one to the other. Basically moving it from one bank account to another. Nothing really new in any of the other changes that weren't discussed in the prior one. And then same thing with the fund table. It's exactly the same as the fund table in the policy. And that just shows the description of changes that occurred in this document. And attachment A is exactly the same as the last, as the policy. So before we go on to any final discussions on the policy and procedure, Kathy, if you can forward through the clean copy there, I want to get into what Tyler and Lee and I discussed within the last week or two regarding another change that had not been reviewed with Andy and Craig. So this is a new change that we're proposing here for attachment A that you just saw in both the policy and procedure. It includes the USDA debt reserve 10-year funding commitment of $42,766. That was in column E in those tables, or in the attachment A that was showing in those two documents. So based on the discussions that I had with Lee and Tyler, we're proposing revising attachment A by removing the debt reserve 10-year commitment and reducing the annual reserves funding required for the first 10 years by the amount that was showing in that column. So reducing it from 145K down to 102.2K per year. And after the first 10 years, so in 2032, the annual funding will revert back to the 145K per year. And if you look at the year-end annual funding balances in the table that we'll show you here in a second, the year-end balances are still over the 40 years, no issues, and the dollar amount changes are within, you know, $100 each year. So it's very close year-end balances making this change. The basis for the change, based on meeting with Tyler and Leah on August 29th, the following rationale was discussed. So we began collecting the annual USDA loan payments from the shareholders. From the shareholders a year earlier than we needed. When we were finalizing the 2020 budget, we counted on and budgeted for the project being completed by December 2020 and our first payment due December 21. However, the project was not completed then. It was completed in January 2021, so that made our first payment due January 2022. As a result, we banked a full year of reserves based on the income collected for the USDA loan payment from the shareholders over that year before we even needed it. So we collected $427,666 in advance. So in December 2020, I just looked back, El Dorado Savings Bank reserve equals $463K with another, so it already included a full year of the loan payment with another full year to collect and build our first annual loan payment, which wasn't due until January 2022. So that's what that's trying to explain. So we now propose that this amount be applied to the full 10-year commitment of the USDA debt reserve and not have to account for it in the money that we set aside each year because we already have it in a reserve account. And so if you move to the next page, you can see that the annual debt reserve column has been taken out. The first 10 years, you can see the dollar amount in column C got reduced by the amount of the debt reserve for those 10 years. And then in 2032, it reverted back to the $145K. So it gives us a bit of relief for the first 10 years and how much we actually have to set aside to fund our capital asset reserves. And in column E, as I mentioned, the dollar changes in that column for the year-end balances are within a few hundred dollars, never over $1,000 difference. So they've changed very little. So I guess what Lee and Tyler were proposing, which I can see their rationale, is that we change attachment A in the policy and procedure to reflect this. So I guess that would have to be voted on at the same time as we vote to approve the policy and procedure.
So Tom, how was the $38,000 delta arrived at?
$38,000 delta?
Yeah, the difference between 102 and 145.
Oh, so that was the dollar amount. It should have been 42. It should have been the amount that we had in the column for the debt reserve, which would have been the 42,007, 42.7 roughly. What's 145 minus 102?
38.
Okay. That's a that's the difference, Andy. Did I explain it?
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
Well, I can. Yeah, I guess I wish I would have had a chance to look at this beforehand. I mean, I can kind of see what you're doing. But our, you know, at the end of the year, December 31st, our debt reserve, our restricted debt reserve, should have about $500,000 in it. And that's 1 year we have, you know, because there's two reserve accounts, right? There's the one that's for, we make a payment of $428,000 every year, right? That's required to be built up over the year. Right, Tom?
Right.
And then we have, then we're funding $43,000 a year, and this will be year two for that, right? So that'll be $86,000. So the 428 plus the 86 is $514,000. And right now, we've got, you know, like, I think we have $505,000 in there. So we're very close right now. We're not over. We're fine. But next year, we're going to have to put another $43,000 in there. So I don't, I'm not sure I'm following the logic completely. I know we've got some, we collected money previously from the shareholders. That's just sitting in our cash accounts. But that still has to get transferred for the debt reserve fund to the debt reserve fund, or it's going to be short.
Yeah, well, we do have more monies coming in that will be added to the 505. You know, the continuing payments that are coming in from our shareholders for the USDA commitment.
Well, but I think that's where I think everybody's getting confused. That's just what we're billing the customers. There's nothing that says that money has to go into this account. That money is collected, and we have to make our debt payments and fund the reserves with it.
I was just going to say that we've been collecting the USDA loan repayment. We've billed four times now, and that money is actually sitting in our operating account waiting for us to transfer it over.
Right,
so when
right.
we transfer that over, we'll have $900,000 whatever in there, and then they'll take the first payment of the 427.
But why would we transfer more than we're required to do so? And we're just locking up cash. We don't need to. We're only required to have what the loan documents say. The rest should just sit in our operating reserve, in our operating account.
Couldn't we just leave it in our operating and just have a note or an asterisk that shows that?
I don't think you need to. Cash is cash, right?
Yeah.
Something that says that cash, and I mean, cash is cash. We're required to, under the loan documents, to pull out money every year and put that aside. And I see no reason to put more than you're required because you're locked in up cash. You don't have to, right? And cash is king. Why put more in reserve than you have to?
And I agree with that.
So I can kind of understand the logic how you got to where you got, you know, just trying to track all this through. But I mean, cash is cash. It just sits in our bank account. It's there. And someone says, well, why do you have so much cash? You know, that's one of the reasons for it.
Yeah. I think what Lee and Tyler were thinking of as they came up with this proposal is since we do have that money, that total amount that's required for the debt reserve in our bank accounts, whatever bank accounts they're in, they were proposing that we don't require it to be collected here each year, which would affect the rates to the shareholders. They were hoping to.
Yeah, that's a rate discussion, not a funding our reserves discussion. That's an entirely different discussion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're proposing we're going to reduce our rates for it, that's a rate discussion.
Okay. I don't know if we're necessarily proposing that we're going to be able to reduce the rate for it. It's that we're not going to have to. We had it as a line item within the budget to make sure we were saving that $40,000. We have it already. We don't need to necessarily, like you're saying, Craig, transfer it. It can sit in our operating for the next 8 years.
Well, every year for 10 years, we're required to transfer $43,000. So when you get to your budget, you just, and it's not an expense. It's just a transfer. Right? It's just transfer to reserve. You should have $43,000 transfer to reserve. It's not an expense. You've already got, I mean, we've already got the cash as you've discussed, right?
Right.
All you have to do is transfer cash over and boom, it's done.
Correct. So what we were looking at is that it's just fully funded for the 10 years, whether we transfer it all now or we transfer it over the period of the next 8 years. Like you're saying, we shouldn't tie up the money. We should keep it in the cash account in case of something else if we needed to use it. But as of right now, we don't need to collect that extra $42,000 a year.
Well, right. But that's where it becomes a rate. I mean, when we set our rates every year, we take a look at how much cash we have, how big we need our rates to be. That's why it may be a rate discussion, but I don't think it's a reserve discussion.
Yeah, so let me interject a thought here. So when I look at column D and the estimated replacement costs for, you know, the various years, I think part of this, $145,000 discussion needs to be around the integrity of these numbers. So when I look at 2035, the $2.538 million being spent allegedly on the Section 13 system upgrade. How confident are we that, $2.1 million is going to cover that cost? So where I'm going with this is, rather than taking down the annual net assets, column C, to 102,200, why not leave it at 145 so that we have, if necessary, monies to cover these large expenditures that, when I think about, where we are with inflation today, these numbers were generated a year ago when inflation was substantially less. We won't have to go back to shareholders and, ask them to dig into their pockets. I don't personally have a problem with our reserve account balances being higher rather than lower.
Right now, I think we have like 800,000 in that reserve account, if I read this schedule. We're only required to have 501, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
So we've already got some excess in there. Plus, we have just a lot of unrestricted cash sitting around, too. So we've got some reserves, and we've got cash sitting around, I think, to cover things. But when we're looking at reserves, I think we just need to separate it out from what we're collecting for now. The reserves should be whatever we're saying they are on these policies, and then it's just a matter of math on how much cash do we need in there. And do we have enough? And the answer is yes, we have enough.
I agree with Andy. I think there's a lot of unknown about these numbers, and if we could leave it as is and put that money in there, it'll be better in the long run. I mean, otherwise it's going to just sit there in a reserve.
I can see your point and Craig's, and like Craig was saying, it's really a rate discussion. Mm-hmm. How we allocate all of our reserves to the different bank accounts. That's
just moving cash around. That's just
It's just moving cash around and changing it to this 102.2 doesn't really change any of that. So it's as you go through the process of the rate discussions, you'll be looking at all that to determine what the rates should be.
I don't even know that the column we took out is one. This main spreadsheet here is talking about what we need for our capital asset reserve, right? We should have a separate computation what we need for our debt. We should have a separate computation what we need for our revenue reserve and the other reserves. So I'm not sure how it came to be that we only talked about two reserves on this one schedule because we have other reserves as well. So I think it may be okay to take it out of here, but I just want to make sure it's being taken out of here for the right reason, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, as it's shown, in the policy and procedure, all those different other reserves also need to be discussed, by the standing committee and with Tyler and staff each year to make sure that none of those require a change. So all that is part of the whole process.
Yeah, and we don't have columns for those. So that's kind of my point. I mean, you've taken it out, which I think is fine, because let's just talk about our, when we're looking at the schedule, I think we should be focusing on our capital asset reserve, and that's where discussions like Andy had brought up. Okay, numbers are just numbers. We look like we're fine, but what's our confidence level? Maybe we do need a little bit more cushion. Fine, that's a decision we can make, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without having it convoluted by debt. That's a whole other discussion. Yeah. That's a pretty simple one. It's just math. That one's very easy. So I think the fact it's come out is okay, because I think it clarifies the schedule a lot more in my mind. And it's just a matter of how much we want to have in there. And right now, we have that five-year thing, and if the board thinks that should be higher, there should be more cushion, that's a different discussion.
Right. So, Craig, would you recommend just taking out the column like this is showing, but just leave the values for now at the 145?
In my mind, it makes it clear, but, you know, I'm just me, you know, so I don't. You guys have been looking at this a lot longer than I have, but I think it kind of confuses two concepts. And personally,
we can easily make that the 145, and that's what'll be as that line item that we're.
It doesn't have to be, because, you know, what we're saying. We're saying right now we only need 501 and we've already got 800. So we're already kind of overfunded. But so I don't know. That's not my decision to make.
Yeah. And I don't mind
being overfunded. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think like Andy's point, I think that's good.
Yeah. So what does everybody think about using this format, this revised format with the debt reserve column taken out, but just leaving all the dollar amounts in column C at 145.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'm good with that.
I'm in favor of that.
Me too.
Yeah, I think that's what we should do.
Okay. So.
And I think if the rates committee wants to go back and reevaluate, you know, and make adjustments for the next 8 years, that's something they can look at. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So the numbers, if you look at the two different tables you presented here, the first one was 145, and then the showing the reserve, and the second proposed one where we have the 102, the numbers in columns F are off a little bit if you look out many years out, and I don't understand why that would be.
Yeah, because I rounded off the 102.2 a little. As I mentioned, that last column there on the right, those dollar values are a little different than the previous, the ones showing in the policy and procedure right now, but they're only off by, you know, minimal amounts. You know, they're off by less than 1,000, I think, in all cases.
So would you go back to the table shown on page 68 and just hide column E? Is that what we do?
Essentially, that's what you'd be. I think that's what you'd be doing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just took formula. I just took out column E in the formula.
Yeah, you have to take out it'll come out of the formula too, so it's going to increase. If we bump up the 102 or whatever to the 145, it's going to increase our level of reserves to the tune of 4,266 times 8 years.
Again, so we would go back to the table on page 68 and just eliminate column E. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're correct, Dan. It would just be B plus C minus D, no longer minus E.
And then column F will go up, the reserve account balances.
Right.
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Craig?
And column F would increase because right now the 42,766 is getting deducted out every year.
Right.
So it's going to give us more cushion.
Okay. We'd have to redo the table and still.
But the 42,766 doesn't go away. That just needs to be on a separate schedule like this that says debt reserve. How much do we need? Well, it's going to be 42,766.
So I guess, Sharon, that if it's your intent, the policy and procedure need to be discussed for approval. And I guess we can propose that based on the way we've decided to revise attachment A can also be discussed for approval.
Yes. So do we need to make a motion so we can do the discussion?
I move that we approve the amended reserve policies.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I guess, reserve schedule, the capital asset reserve schedule, removing the $42,766 per year for the next
8 or 9 years, whatever it is.
8 or 9 years.
Do I hear a second?
Andy, could you rephrase that? I'm sorry, I was having trouble.
Oh, you think I'm that smart I can remember what I said? Okay, maybe we break it into two steps.
Let's do two steps.
All right, so the first step would be to approve the amended reserve policies.
Procedure.
And procedures, yes.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second the motion.
Who was that? Oh, John. Oh. Okay.
You know.
Is there any discussion?
You know.
On the reserve policies and procedures. Okay, hearing none. Let's vote. Can we do a roll call for the vote, Kathy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Jones?
You're muted, Jeff.
Hi.
Bruce Utter?
Yes, hi.
John Dashner?
Yes.
Sharon Tobias?
Yes.
Dan Crosby?
Yes.
Andy Rich?
Yes.
And Bill's absent.
Okay, so motion carries. Or we've approved it. All right. So then the next item had to do with we needed a motion regarding the actual attachment and the reserve funding.
Which one are you going to refer to just to start off on that? There was the original attachment A, then there was a revised attachment A, which we're going to kind of go back and unrevise, right? So which one do you want to talk about? The original attachment A?
I think we should.
Yeah.
And then the change there is just to remove column E from the table.
Okay. So we need a motion to accept attachment A, the original, with the revision that we're going to remove column E from that table. So I need a motion from someone.
Yes.
Brave person.
So let me try this. So
okay.
I move that we accept the capital asset reserve schedule as outlined on page 68 of the board package for the September 17, 2022 board meeting, with the removal of column E.
Okay. That's well done, Andy. Thank you.
I'll second that.
And that's Bruce?
Yes.
Thank you.
So just one question, maybe for Tom. So the loan papers, the final loan papers, did they say that this $42,766 had to be put in a special reserve fund, or is it just that we had to have a reserve for those money?
Say that again, Craig.
It's a separate reserve fund. Both of these are required. That's why they're A lot of the changes that Tom was going through was shuffling between what was restricted and what's reserved. The definition of restricted is restricted by an outside body, not just the board. So they are required to be held in a segregated account.
So the 42,766, we only have to have that dollar amount accumulate each year.
So yeah, 42,766 a year for 10 years. Then on top of that, if you don't make monthly debt payments, which we don't, we do annual, you're required to have another reserve account, which basically at the end of, you know, when the payment's due, has a full year's worth of payment in there to make your payment out of. So $427,666. And then every year when you make your debt service payment, you just write a check out of that account and it goes to zero, and you just fund it as the year goes along again. So net net, it's a zero transfer because you're transferring money in and you're using it to pay the expense.
So Dan, my observation is that the column E, which reads USDA debt reserve, is on this slide captured under the capital asset reserve schedule. They're two different reserves. So, you know, I think removing column E just clarifies for everyone who would be looking at this that, you know, what the capital asset reserve requirements and, you know, for the next 40 years look like.
Yeah, it's much cleaner just having it include the capital asset reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're not, sure we don't have to show that separately to meet the requirements of the loans.
And then Tyler's already sent out an initial draft of the budget to the, I can't remember the names of the committees, but I'll call it the budget committees. So. And I've taken a first pass of that, and we're going to have another meeting, and when we go through the budget, I'm going to make sure that I understand all the budget, all the reserve accounts and what needs to be done, and if we're overfunded, underfunded, that'll be part of that discussion.
Okay.
And bottom line is we're going to be overfunded, so as far as I can tell right now, so fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you still need to vote, don't you?
We do need to vote. Is there any more discussion or questions? Okay, Kathy, can you do a roll call? Kathy?
On mute.
Sorry, I was on mute. Jeff Jones.
Aye.
Bruce Utter.
Aye.
John Dashner.
Aye.
Karen Tobias.
Aye.
Dan Crosby.
Aye.
Andy Rich.
Aye.
So what I'll do is I'll provide the updated attachment A, Kathy, so that you have the version that has just been approved, and I'll give you the Excel spreadsheet too, along with the standing committee. They'll get all this information. I'm still organizing all those files so that I can provide those hopefully in the next few weeks here. I think I might be up in Arnold in October sometime, and I plan to bring up a thumb drive with all the files separated by standing committee. So if anybody needs anything sooner than that, just let me know.
Tom, thank you so much for all your work on this.
You're welcome.
This is I'd like to say it was a labor of love, but I'm not sure love was actually involved. It was just a lot of labor. So thank you. And also to the committee who helped with all the reserves. Reviewing these, Andy and Craig. I forgot who else is on it. I'm sorry. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This is great work, Doug.
Well, I've got company, so I'm going to have to bow out. I think my part's over unless anyone has any other questions.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Tom.
All righty. Bye.
Yeah, and I've got about 10 minutes, and I've got to go.
Okay. All right.
Sure. We had one more standing committee report.
Okay. Jeff Jones, the Water Supply Conservation and Outreach.
I'm about to run out of battery, so we're plugging me in right now. Figured that we'd run out of power right when this happened. Kathy, can we put up the meeting minutes? That's okay. I can just go from mine.
Sorry, I didn't have that in mind.
Hang on a second, let me get to it.
I'll make sure to do that next time.
Okay, we met on August 24th. This was our, inaugural meeting. We, I'm going to get plugged in here. We were kind of winging it. This is our first one. We didn't know exactly what we were going to do. So it was Sharon, Joe, Tyler, Lee, Kathy, and myself. And we talked about where we are now with supply. The bored well is not online yet. The last quote that we had was a guesstimate of 1 million to 1.5 million to get it online. And Tyler is working on recalculating the cost at today's rates so we get a better figure, a more exact figure on what it'll cost to bring Borad online. And as I recall, I think we're talking about 50 gallons a minute that well would produce, and we would spend the money to do that on a phased approach.
Yeah, 50 to 100 gallons a minute.
50 to 100. So 50 was a minimum. Mm-hmm. And then we also talked about groundwater versus surface water age. Was been tested once. We have plenty of groundwater right now. If you look at all of the tables that we saw earlier, we don't need CCWD. That's basically what it amounts to, that we've got an agreement in place if our wells should dry up, but it looks like where we're headed is that we're in good shape now. We need to revisit the contract with them every 5 years. And Tyler's basic position is that we're paying for water that we're not using. We'd like to add a flushing clause in the contract that we've got with them. Joe would really like to see us add more capacity, in other words, spend the money to buy more future use. And there's actually an expansion clause in our agreement with CCWD that says if we need the water, we might have to pay to help them pay for expansion to the wastewater treatment plant. That's something that we don't like and would like to address down the road.
Just the treatment plant, Jeff, not the wastewater treatment plant.
Oh, okay.
Just the treatment plant.
Okay. We want to get the Borad well online, and we will propose budget money to get started on that in 2023. This is our kind of a long-range plan to keep CCWD as a backup to our wells. The charts that we looked at earlier show that conservation is working. And then finally, we think that one of the duties of the committee is to reach out to the shareholders to talk about conservation, to talk about water quality. We have money to publish some brochures if we want to. And we may need to do mailings to the shareholders, but if we can avoid postage costs, we want to do that. And I think that's a brief overview of what we talked about. I'd also like to say that both from I was in the meeting live, and we had it was a hybrid meeting like we're having now, and that OWL device that Andrew talked about has made a huge difference in the way the meetings sound and look. That's about it.
So, which bill is the Borad? Well, I'm familiar with that well.
Borad is a well that we currently just have a well casing down. It's another place we had found water off of Dunbar Road. It currently is not developed, nor is the piping tied into our system. We would like to develop that well eventually to where it just helps, helps us with our water. We're going to have another 50 to 100 gallons a minute coming into the treatment plant, so we'll be able to not use as much out of the other two wells and be able to, in basicness, to think about we're going to have three glasses of water and three straws in it, not three straws and one glass of water that we're sucking on, so.
Tyler, right now, is the cost for that well developing that, is that included in the fixed asset system right now in the spreadsheets or no?
No, that one is not a part of any of the asset management or any of the additional projects to say. This is something that has not been planned on, nor has the money been set aside for yet.
Maybe we find our use for our money collected in advance.
Yeah. Uh-huh. For the extra $38,000.
Exactly.
So, Tyler, why did we – I'm trying to remember the history on the Borad well and why we did not develop it further.
I believe that was when we initially got our contract with CCWD, and that was the choice made, was to spend the $1 million with CCWD and not on the well. And then when I first came in here as general manager, the option was to spend another $800,000 with CCWD to take up capacity to 200,000 per day, or to develop Borad. Both are our only choices right now for expanding our sources. So I feel that Borad is the best choice as far as right away, especially looking at the numbers we have and what is going on with CCWD with the HA5s, I think the best move would be to make sure we can rely on ourselves even more and work on expanding that well pit. It doesn't necessarily have to be done overnight. We can have it take a couple years to develop and do it in pieces, so it's not so a full $1 million or $1.5 million right up front. We could, spend $200,000-$500,000 a year and start developing it.
Can I just say something? So when we were looking for water, 8 years ago, we found Lucia and we found Borad. So we developed the Lucia because that was about $500,000 overall for everything to like get the easement and do what we needed to do. Borad was so much more, and it was a very painful process to buy that property from Borad. And it was going to cost like $1 million, just because it's a long pipeline just to get it to where our wellhead is. And we knew that with CCWD, we could have water immediately versus waiting a year or two to develop that well. So Borad was always like, well, we have it if we need it, but we had no plans to develop it out because of the cost. We were starting the USDA loan. All that stuff is more tangible. We needed to do that program. And, also we didn't realize we kept the capacity option open with CCWD because we thought that we were going to be using a lot more water. But as you can tell, over the last year, our water, you know, use has dropped. And I think it's a great idea to pursue borad versus adding capacity to CCWD. So
that was the general consensus among the committee members that were there. Joe was if Joe is still here, Joe was the strong supporter of, you know, keeping the options open with CCWD. But, you know, I think the consensus amongst the committee was that we would rather have the backup in our own ownership than having to depend on CCWD for it.
Well, I think we still are keeping our option open with CCWD, but we're creating another backup source for ourselves soon.
Oh, okay.
Well, we are and we aren't, I think, Sharon, as I understand it, you know, if we want to safeguard the future with additional capacity from CCWD, that's an $800,000 expense.
Right.
But so maybe, you know, the prudent thing to do would be to, you know, spend that $800,000 differently and guarantee, you know, that we have our own, you know, future supply. I'm assuming, Jeff, that, you know, you're not suggesting disconnecting our current supply from CCWD, but continuing that, but not contracting for that supplemental water. Is that correct?
Tyler, back me up on this, but yes, that we keep what we've got and we don't accept the other option.
Right. We keep using CCWD out of tank 4 and as a supplemental water for our subdivision, but going toward the reliability of just being for ourselves and easing back on the wells, adding another well is a better move than purchasing more capacity from CCWD. Like you're saying, Andy, spending $1 million on that right now, and I can look through the numbers and the usage over the last year, and it shows that we don't need to purchase more capacity. So to purchase more capacity for something we probably don't need, that's really tough. You know, I think back the last time that we were buying water from CCWD during that month, we didn't even meet our minimum requirements for what we're supposed to take. And so we're well under that 100,000 per day. So we should be able to not purchase more capacity right away. And then when we do look at possibly purchasing more capacity, have it being substantially less than another 100,000. That would be the ultimate game plan. That way we're only purchasing, let's say, 25 or 50,000 at a rate of 200 to 500,000 instead of a full million.
Does that sound good?
Well, I think it sounds good. What I'd like to see, though, is you know, what the historic lows on our existing wells have been, and how that compares to current levels of usage. Yeah, I think, you know, if we believe in the, you know, global warming situation, if we agree that we're going to have another year of La Nina, we can expect the groundwater levels to continue to drop.
But they haven't been dropping, Andy.
Yeah, I hear that and I understand that, Jeff, but,
historically, when we were only using well 3, the levels were low, very low, to where we were very uncomfortable with it. Once we got Lucia online and we were using 2 wells, that dramatically changed. Once we got the CCWD, it changed even more. So I think moving forward, we're not necessarily going to have to worry about well 3, because that's our golden boy. It produces 300 some odd gallons a minute. It's that's the one we don't want to see drop and lose. If we lost, it would be very detrimental. So just trying to relax on well three, not pumping on it constantly, is the end goal. I think dividing it up between three different wells makes it to where that well shouldn't disappear. It definitely won't overnight. But as well, we have to have half our water coming from CCWD, just makes that even better.
So is well four and Lucia the same well?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. In my mind, it's Lucia. I forget that it's well four. So.
Okay.
So what we're looking for is to get an approval from the board to get BORED moving online over the next 2-3 years.
I think we need to see a really pretty detailed cost estimate on what it's going to cost us. I mean, how much is the land acquisition? How long is the pipeline? What's that going to cost us? What's the development going to cost us?
Tyler's working on getting all those costs updated.
And we do own the land outright. We bought it 8 years ago. We own it. We just need to. It was an expensive well to develop because of how far away it is from our. You know, the well development isn't that expensive. It's water to our pipeline was going to be costly. So. But yeah, Tyler's going to work on an estimate to get better quotes, I believe. And then yes. I think that goes to the infrastructure committee and then the finance committee, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I agree with the concept and the direction, Jeff. But like Dan says, I'd like to see, tighter budget estimate.
Yeah, that's no problem. I'll start getting those prices together on current piping. We know the distance, so that's all fairly easy to figure out. We know what buildings we're going to need out there. We will have to pay for power drop down on a three-phase coming from PG&E. That'll probably be a fairly large cost. But Dave had it all worked out before I ever even got up here. There's an entire file on what the cost was going to be to get BORED online.
Okay, that'd be good. Now, do we need any right-of-ways for the pipeline that runs from BORED to well three?
It'll be running down the side of the road, Dunbar, and crossing onto Blagan, and then right about the Moose Lodge is where it would connect to our pipeline. I don't know about the right-of-ways right now.
So if we decide to pursue this with a formal approval from the board, what obligation do we have to communicate with the shareholders? Because this is kind of a fairly significant change in our strategic direction on the water supply side.
Well, one of the things Tyler and I have talked about, and Tyler, you can step in if you don't like this, is not spending all the money all at once, but just like 1 year we put up a gate, and 1 year we drop the power line. So it's not like unless the board chose, like, yes, we're going to do this year in 2024 or something, that we want to do it. So it's more, you know, what can we do every year to get there in 5 years? So I don't know if that, but I think that'll be clearer, like, once we have an estimate. But I do think that eventually if we make the decision, we would tell our shareholders. That could go out in the annual newsletter or on the website, right, Tyler?
Yeah, I believe we'd be our obligation to be telling them what we're doing with something that large. But I also feel that it's in the best interest of the shareholders with protecting their water supplies.
Yeah, and I don't think you'll get a whole lot of pushback on that. But it is a fairly significant change in the strategic direction of the water company.
Mm-hmm.
And this little exercise was done without Tom. So
it
was,
no.
Well, yeah. We, you know,
oh, no.
You might want to take a closer look at the whole package. We didn't have, I didn't have the directions from Tom that we got today. Wish I'd had that earlier, Tom. Then, you know, you appreciate our changes here, and appreciate Tom a whole lot more when it comes right down to taking over what Tom has been working on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I agree. Okay, is there anything else on this? So Tyler will get work on the estimate and get back to the infrastructure group.
Yeah, I'll make sure and I have something worked out before I meet with infrastructure and facilities and then with finance and rates.
Okay.
So I'll get something worked up for that and we'll have more discussions within the committees before we finalize anything to bring before the board.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the support, folks.
Thank you,
Jeff. What is our next board meeting?
November 12th,
yeah.
I think.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe we could calendar this as an agenda item.
Yeah, I would like to try to meet with all the committees, hopefully before then, and definitely before the end of the year.
Okay. I'm putting it on the agenda in my notes. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I think now we're on to new business. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
We have the approval of the bylaws change.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Sorry, I don't have the agenda here, so. All I see is what you have.
We still got the Long Range Planning Committee slide up, Kathy.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. Okay.
Let's see. All right, Andrew.
Morning, everyone.
Morning.
This item is for the formal approval of the bylaws change that you initiated at the last meeting. As a reminder, this change would reduce the quorum requirement for shareholder meetings from 25% down to the legal minimum 20%. The text of this change has been posted to the water company website for more than 30 days. I think it's probably been more like 60 at this point. And I'm not aware of whether you received any public comment or otherwise on this change, Kathy or Tyler.
I had one. Do you want me to read it?
If you could at least summarize, yeah.
Yeah, it was just somebody who's lived there as part-time homeowner since 1972, and he was afraid that the reduction in the bylaw results would result in full-time residents making all the rules with part-time residents not having a real voice.
Okay.
So with that, this item is just up for your formal approval with the resolution. I'm happy to answer any questions you have, but the next step would be to approve the resolution, and then we would make the change to the bylaws with the next update.
So can I make a motion that we accept resolution number 22-09-17 as written?
I'll second that.
Should we do roll call? Oh, wait, do we have any discussion? Hearing none, I say we do roll call. Kathy?
Hey, Jeff Jones.
Jeff, you're muted.
Hi.
Bruce Sutter.
Aye.
John Dashner.
Aye.
Karen Tobias.
Aye.
Dan Crosby.
Aye.
Andy Rich.
Aye.
Motion carries. Or I guess resolution's approved. So.
Thank you very much. And I'd note that that was the first time that the board has updated the bylaws under the new system. So smoother process than the past when we had to go to the shareholders for every update. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. Preliminary budget.
So we sent out the preliminary budget, about 2 weeks ago, just for everybody to look at and see if anybody had any input on changes we should make or other items we should be adding. This is definitely not a final, and everything on it is up for discussion.
I do have a couple of questions on metered water. We have a year-end estimate of 3,000, but a 2022 budget of 33,000. Why the big difference?
The metered water, I believe that would be a typo looking at it right now. We have more than 33,000, or not more than 33,000, but more than 3,300 that we've collected in metered water. Is that correct, Kathy? Do we have more than 3,300?
Yes, we do. We just billed out 7,000 in metered water just with this last billing. So
that's not correct on the year-end estimate and the year-to-date on metered water. That's definitely not correct.
Okay.
I will get with Lee and make sure that that has changed.
Could you check a lot of the others too, the year-end estimates?
You have something different, Kathy, than what I have, because...
Oh, this is the one that Lee sent me, so I have the wrong one?
Yeah, because my preliminary budget shows metered water, estimated year-end is
26,129.
Okay. So, where penalties is the numbers I have. So the penalties is actually the metered water.
Oh, okay.
And then the snowflake lodge isn't the $25 either. That's something very messed up there.
That was my other question, is the snowflake water. Right.
Yeah, because that's not what I have on my budget in front of me.
Okay, so
do you have the other one that we were working on?
I'm looking right now to see if it's on my desktop.
In year end.
Yeah, interest income also looks like it's out of line.
Interest income. We have only a year end estimate of $25, so that's where there's something lined. Okay.
I do not have that last. This is the one that was sent to me, so I apologize.
Is everything off by one with the USDA residents and lot fees, 10% of current year? I'm wondering if that got inserted because the service line loan repayment, I doubt we had $12,000 in loan repayments.
We only had one shareholder.
So I think something got inserted for the USDA residents and lot fees, 10% current year. I think everything got shifted down.
Okay, I just scanned in the one that I had.
Does that make sense?
Well, whether that's the case or not, I think, you know, the management owes the board, the correct version so that we're not sitting here trying to second guess which line item is what number.
You're absolutely right, Andy.
So I think we need to table this discussion.
Okay. Well, I scanned in the one that I have, and Kathy should be able to pull it up.
Can you also have her email it to everybody so we have a more recent version? Because after the board meeting, we still won't have.
Is this the one that was emailed to all of you?
Yes.
This is what's in our packet.
I didn't get a email. Thank you.
Yeah, this is the same one that, yeah, she just pulled up the board packet, so.
So, Tyler, who sent out the email with the budget, proposed budget on? Is that from you or Kathy?
Well, I never got a separate email with the budget. It's just in the board packet.
Yeah, neither did I. That's why I was
So I think,
haven't seen one.
You know, in the interest of time, it's 11:20.
Let's move on.
I think we should move on. And
sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
Sorry.
So the next page we have is the rate that we came up with. So are we tabling this whole thing?
I think we table it, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think we need to have the rate committee review and approve whatever's submitted to the board rather than getting discuss the cart ahead of the horse, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Because Bill, Craig, and I have not met on the proposed rate structure.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so where does that leave us? I'm getting short on time myself.
We'll table this for now. I'll get the correct budget sent out to you guys, and then Andy, you, I, Craig, and Bill will meet up here soon to talk over the rate.
Yeah, I also think that when it comes to compensation, it's obviously going to be a while before I get the information and able to do the study and research and report recommendations. But I think given where we are today, knowing the inflation numbers, your 5% number is probably low, so I would recommend that in the revised budget you jack that up to something around 8%.
Okay.
And then we can always adjust it more finely from there.
Okay.
It may end up going as high as 10, but I don't have the data to support that.
All right. Yeah, and I've been getting with AWWA, they still don't have an end date on the publishing of the salary survey. But.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the monthly billing.
So we just did our fourth billing for the year. Payments are coming in good. We have over 500 people on auto pay now. We do have one lien that's supposed to be paid on Monday and another one that I had to file. But if you looked at the aged reports in the financials, we're still doing very well collecting. So.
Yeah, but I think that what I saw shows that there's over $1 million outstanding.
A million.
Yeah, if you add up your aged receivables,
I think it's 100, and it's over 100,000.
It's cumulative. You can add them all. It's kind of misleading the way it's reported.
Do you have the slide?
Yes. Let me go back to that.
Financial, the total dollar.
Yeah, I have. And that's because we just billed. And that was at the end of August, so now it's September 17th, and we've received a large amount of payments already, so that just reflects the end of August, right when we first billed. But if you look at, like, our detailed summary down here, there, 2,000 OO past 90 days. The 126 is mostly the liens that we have on file. We have like 18 people, and I think like it was shared at another meeting that about 9 of those total $100,000 of liens.
Okay.
So.
But I've been trying. The total amount owed is $388,000.
That's correct.
Right? So yeah. That's what, yeah.
Yeah, but we're down, we've collected at least 100,000 since then as of today's date, so it's down even lower.
So what is the current line item? What does that mean?
That's how many, that's what's owed currently. That we just billed out, so they only owe for the last billing. And then the past 30 would owe for two billings and so forth and so on.
Okay, so the 388,000 is what was totally billed?
That's how much is totally owed at the, as of that August 31st date. So the current is how much we still need to collect from the billing we just did. And then it separates out how many owe past 30, 60, 90. So if you took 126 off of that 388, that's your current. And the 126 is our people with liens.
Yeah, but if I take 126 away from 388, that's not 238.
Right.
No. No, but that's what the other three columns, the past 30 days, past 60, and past 90. So I've been working mostly on the past 90-day people. I can step it up and start working on the past 60-day people.
So are you saying that if you took the detailed summary, which is that third column, and you added up the 238,018 all the way to the 126,580, you'd get the 388?
I'm going to do that, right?
Yeah. That's how I read it.
Yeah.
Just making sure. So.
But that's not what what Kathy said. You know, if I understood what Kathy said, is the 126,580.
Right.
Is inclusive of the 30-day, 60-day, and 90-day.
Oh.
So 126,580
is only 120 plus days past due.
So let me explain it. So the 120-day people are also part of the 90-day, are also part of the 60-day, and are also part of the 30-day. And they're also part of the current because we just billed them again. Does that make sense?
Well, then the math doesn't work.
You're right. You're right. So it's probably better to just look at the cumulative and not the detailed. The way Black Mountain separates it out for us.
Well, maybe what's missing here is the total amount billed, total amount received, which would then give you your total balance.
Right.
Then you could redistribute distribute the current, well, past due 30, 60, 90, 120.
That's correct. Yeah, this is just a report that Black Mountain generates for us at the end of each month, and then we just put what Black Mountain does. So it's a little bit different than what we build and what we've received, et cetera, like you're saying. So we could rearrange that if you wanted us to.
Well, personally, I'd like to because
okay.
I don't know. I don't want to be the only one complaining about this or worrying at this, but it doesn't provide a clear picture of what our receivables are.
Yeah, and I think Andy's right. And when I do the math, it's still off by $4,000.
Right.
But the total balance is not. I think one time I did the math and it actually worked out. So, but maybe that's just my imagination. So can you work on that, Kathy?
Yes, I will. I'll have a better one for the next meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Sure.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Kathy.
Sure.
Let's see. In the interest of time, what was next on the agenda?
Sorry.
The last thing is reportable items.
There.
And under the reportables, that we currently had, everything had been completed, except for the reserve fund policy and operating procedure, which we completed today.
Okay. Tyler, the last one says you're going to attend the meeting on July 13th and report it to the board. I don't remember seeing a report.
Of the consortium?
Yeah.
So during the consortium with Up the Hill people, it basically was just us bouncing ideas off of how to share resources with each other, mainly who we used for our tanks, because they want to build new tanks up the hill. Who do we use for our lab, because they're having issues with their lab. It pretty much was just us giving them contacts. There was nothing else. We're not doing anything together. We're not in any signing of a joint consortium. It was just the Up the Hill people trying to get some intel on what to do because they're so small. They don't even have a full board, or like Tamrac has a larger board than we do, but they only serve a couple hundred people. So they're having issues. They just wanted to see how everybody else ran their business. Mainly they just asked me a bunch of contacts for how to get things done.
Okay. Is there a plan for further meetings or not?
No. No, right now there's no plan for further meetings. There's just small emails between each other. When they asked me, like recently was one about our glass line tanks, how well they've held up, where we got them from. And I passed that on to Bear Valley Water. And that was basically it. As I know right now, there is no plan to meet again.
Okay.
Okay. Kathy, do you have a list of the new action items or reportable items?
I have two. I might have missed something. So Tom was going to get me the updated Schedule A with the minus the column D with the right numbers and column E. And then Tyler was going to do borad well costs, detailed borad well costs. Mm-hmm. And then we need to get the correct budget emailed to you guys. And I'm not sure what else I should have on here.
Mitchell reworked the billable.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. You also need to add the BORAD work that Tyler was going to do.
Right. The cost for the BORAD. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have that as well.
And I think that those costs will go first to the infrastructure and the finance committee. Right, to the appropriate committees before we go out to the board with them. Correct?
Yes. Correct, yes. Yeah. So right. Is that what we're doing with the budget, too? You just want that to go to specific people, or should it go to the whole board?
I would like to see it, but...
yeah, I agree.
I think we'd all like to see it, knowing that the budget committee, finance and rates, are going to be looking at it as well, and we'll know that there be changes. So.
Okay.
But we don't want the one you have. We want the one that's revised.
I know.
Revised.
So, sorry.
No, we want the one you're revised with the 8% salary increases. You know, just.
We'll make all the changes to it, and then I'll double check and make sure that we have the right one being sent out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. Sarah and I never received the last one you sent out. Who sent that one out?
It went in the board packet.
I think Tyler sent a preliminary budget to Bill, Craig, and myself as the committee people.
Yeah.
It wasn't to everybody. Okay.
So, all right. So our next meeting is November 12th, which mm-hmm. I believe someone pointed out was the day after Veterans Day. So we wanted to confirm that at this point in time, people think they can attend.
I think I'm going to be out of the country then.
Is that Dan?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can be there.
It works for me.
Me too.
So I hear Andy, John, Bruce,
Jeff,
and Sharon. And we don't know about Bill. Okay. So I think we'll move forward. Hopefully Bill will be there. And I'll confirm with Craig. And I think we will be talking about the budget a lot at mm-hmm. that meeting. So I'll send Craig. Tyler, can you contact Craig and make sure he'll be at the November 12th meeting? He's available.
I'll reach out to him.
Yeah, that would be great. Is there anything I'm missing?
I don't think so. Here, let me pull up the agenda.
I think some items came up for an executive session, so I think at that November meeting we will have an executive session. So
okay.
We just didn't, it didn't make it on this agenda, so
okay.
We couldn't do it.
Got it.
Thank you, everybody. It looks like we got everything. I hope you all have a nice September.
So we can't have an executive session?
No. If it's not on the agenda, we can't have it. Is that correct, Andrew?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I would have to check the rules, but was it a late add, some emergency item, or was it just a slip up in getting things on?
It was something developed this week that if we had had an executive session, we could have done it, but we didn't. I think it's too late to add it. When I realized on Thursday that it would be good. Am I allowed to even discuss it here or no?
Is there an urgent need to consider it, or would rolling it over to November work? I'm checking my Open Meeting Act, because under normal circumstances, if there's something that's urgent and just came up, we can add it to the agenda. Usually we do that at the beginning, but.
Oh, well.
I believe it's something we could call a special meeting for if we need to before November, but it definitely could be on the November meeting as well. If anybody feels that we need to get it done right away, but there's nothing that's very pressing to happen this month.
Well, now that you've let the cat out of the bag, I'm really curious as to what the hell this is.
Can I say what it is? Or
go ahead,
Jim. Unfortunately, I have no idea what it is, so I
know.
Don't know.
It pertains to compensation for to prepare the compensation package for our employees.
Got it.
So. I think it's okay that we discuss it in November, but I'll talk offline with Tyler and Andy, and if we need to call an executive session beforehand, we will. Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I would think as the compensator or the personnel committee lead,
mm-hmm.
I should be in the loop on this if it's a personnel issue.
Well, actually, it's not a personnel issue. It's a board member issue.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So okay. We will get back to you guys. Thank you so much for your time. I'll be less vague later. So I don't know what we can say in a recorded session. So I don't want to. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody.
We'll need a motion to adjourn, right?
Oh.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
All right. Motion carries. We don't have to vote, right? Adjourn.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. We adjourned.
Tyler, the boardroom audio sounded great. We could hear you very well.
Thank you for the owl recommendation. It's worked great.
Absolutely. I'm glad it worked. Sorry it was expensive, but it seems to be
yeah.
Thank you.
All right.